blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassion and comprehension that dissipates delusion. By compassion and aspiration that harms no one. By compassionate speech that makes for clarity. By compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret. By compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. By compassionate endeavor that results in goodness. By compassionate mindfulness that proves this path. By compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi saha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
We are here to end suffering.
If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering.
What shall we look at this morning? Pinning.
Two things. One is I was just, you know, we talk about conditioning as an energy management system. Mm-hmm. So I was just really being aware of that. So when I sit, there's just this impulse, well, there's this to do, and there's this to do, and there's this to do, and when I get home, I ought to do this and this and this. And when I get home, there'll be an impulse to sit in front of the computer. And there's never any message when I'm in front of the computer of other things to do. And I just really got... It's an energy management system.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It's managing the energy in its best interest, whatever, and yeah. Wherever you are.
Yeah.
It's not at all really about what it says it's about.
No. I just really was experiencing that so much.
That is such a good illustration.
Yeah. The other thing is I just read this great thing. I just wanted to share it because, you know, so we had to miss the bridge walk. Uh-huh. But I heard this thing that relates so much to the work. So I was watching this. There was a workshop this weekend at Omega Institute, and one of the speakers was Paul Hawken, who's an environmentalist, mm-hmm. and he's been doing this study about what he calls drawdown. And so, you know, we keep emitting carbon into the atmosphere, and he said there has to come a point where we, if we're going to survive, where we have to find ways to actually start drawing down the amount of carbon we emit. Mm-hmm. So he's enlisted 100 people all over the world to study different things that are already happening that would, if they were brought to scale, actually create drawdown. Mm-hmm. And then when he was done, he ranked them in terms of what would be the potential impact if we really did this. So from 1 to 100, mm-hmm. number 6, educate the girls.
Wow. That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Educate the girls. Uh-huh. Because, he said, you know, when you're in a culture where, you know, they drop out of school, uh-huh. they get married young, and they start having children, he said that on the average worldwide, it would be like 5.6 children per girl. Uh-huh. If they get through high school, 2.1 children. So just that is a huge reduction in population. Uh-huh. Plus, they're educated. They raise their own children differently, and they create a different kind of society.
Wow.
Blew me away. And then he said, number 7 was family planning,
uh-huh.
like contraception, birth information, prenatal care. He said if those two were put together, they would be number 1.
Huh. On how to draw down the carbon.
How to reverse global warming.
Wow. Educate the girls in family.
Would be the number 1 thing we could do. I mean, it just blew me away. And I thought, you know, we never know. You know, in a sense, we never know the impact of what we're doing. But talk about it, everything's connected.
Who would have thought would have made the list and so high up on the list?
I know. Uh-huh. Number 1 is like changing how we refrigerate things. You know, I mean, uh-huh. that makes, you know, that I think, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But educate the girls and family planning could reverse global warming if it was done at scale. So I thought, it's just, that's just so exciting, yes, and so remarkable, and just, you know, I'm just thinking about those fabulous girls. Wow. And the fabulous men that we have to create in order to let those fabulous girls be fabulous girls. So there's so many changes, yeah, connected to that. But that could affect global warming? Yeah. Who would have felt?
Well, and the way you started out, connecting it to how it connected in your hearing of it, that we're already doing that. You know, we're yes, as a Sangha, as a whole community, Living Compassion Africa and Living Compassion here, yep, and other parts of the world, yep, together are doing what will actually, according to Hawkins, heal the world.
Yep.
If, you know, when brought to scale. And just the, I just love the sort of the way that you laid it out, which was making that connection, mm-hmm, with what we're doing, sort of, I don't know, intuitively or guided by life or however we would want to say that.
Right. And actually, the 100 things he studied are already happening. He said, we didn't imagine these. They're happening out of other people's imagination. They just have to be brought to scale.
Brought to scale.
But I was so excited when I heard that. And I thought about those kids in Cataloma. And there are other organizations doing that too, you know,
yeah,
who out there saying, we have to educate these girls, but I would just have never put that together with climate change.
Yeah, it just doubles the joy.
When we talk about changing the world.
Yes.
I mean, it's bigger than we thought.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So our awareness expands, our joy expands, our understanding and appreciation of what we're doing expands. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just another example of, you know, sometimes we talk about, well, how does it help to do a little project, or how does it help to meditate, or how, mm-hmm, how are we serving, you know, that came up the other night, how are we serving the world? We don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
But here's somebody who quantified it.
Yes.
And said it could be number one.
Wow.
Holy mackerel.
That's
love
amazing.
It.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. Scott.
Love practice.
Love practice.
I love being in group. I mean, oh my gosh. Just, you know, you can just feel,
uh-huh,
wow, okay, yeah. And there's like an intuitive, you hear information like that, and there's some intuition that's like, yeah, that completely makes sense. Even though I would have never thought of that.
Yes,
you know?
I would have never thought of
exactly
that.
So, gosh, there's just so much going on. And I was looking at this metaphor of what's going on in practice with running. Mm-hmm. I run a couple times a week. And I also looking at energy. And moving my practice a little bit more to focusing on life.
Mm-hmm.
And energy and the gap,
mm-hmm,
and a little bit less on what the identities have to say about things, uh-huh, and what conditioning is doing and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And it's very exhilarating.
Ooh, that shift is,
yeah,
exhilarating.
Yeah, I just am seeing, feeling, experiencing the difference between kind of sitting back almost like, almost like a tiny bit of analyzing or looking, but not in the looking that we talk about,
uh-huh,
at practice, versus just like kind of leaning forward and just letting it happen.
Uh-huh.
You know, really the difference between somebody doing practice and then life living.
Yes. Wow, that is just such a critical movement. Because there's the identity, we might say, that is the one analyzing, watching, doing practice. But what you're practicing with is letting go the focus of attention on any identity or about practice, mm-hmm, and leaning in,
yeah,
and actually feeling the energy, feeling,
yeah,
life that's actually doing.
Yeah.
If we're going to identify with anything, let's identify with that.
Exactly. So physical exercise, physical movement, being in a body is just such a great place to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to do this race in November, and I'm not doing the race to like win anything or even have a best time. I'm gonna run with my brother, and it'll be what it's been probably. We're just gonna trot along and, you know, raising some money, and it's just, I love being with the people doing it, and it's just super fun. But it's almost like an excuse to have a focus.
Uh-huh.
Like I wanna see what's possible with the running.
Uh-huh.
You know, like how fast can I do 4 miles? You know, and there's just so many different ways I can go about that, and I've experienced them all.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost like at the beginning, there's often there's a pushing, and there's an expectation, and then there's a disappointment if it's not happening. And even right before I start, it's like, you better. You're going to have to. Are you ready? Are you ready? And it creates resistance. You know, it's not fun. It feels like I have to perform, yeah, which is so familiar across my life.
Yeah.
And so what I've learned to do when I start these kinds of things is just like, just set an amount of time you're going to run and just see how it is and go for it. Have fun. Mm-hmm. And then there's this progression that happens when he's just allowed to be, mm-hmm, and just allowed to run. And then after a while, it's kind of like, I'm kind of curious, but I wonder how fast that is. Mm-hmm. So then I bring in the timing of it. Mm-hmm. And so there's just those different approaches, yeah, you know, kindness, compassion, just accepting wherever he's at,
yeah,
no pressure. And then something else takes over. Yeah. It's like, then he's allowed to be almost present. And then it's not a pressure, he just, whoa, like, this is kind of fun, you know,
yeah,
which is really parallel to practice.
Yes.
You know, you don't have, are you here, are you here, are you here?
Yeah, yeah.
You just relax, it's okay. I'm, you know, the two-handed recording's been really helping with that. Mm-hmm. Just allow, you can just say whatever's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then something clicks, mm-hmm, catches,
mm-hmm,
and it's more, oh, there's the rhythm, there's the calibration.
Mm-hmm. Wow, and proving that through experientially over and over and over,
yeah,
that, okay, the runner doesn't need to be scrutinized or pressurized, mm-hmm, or anything like that. He can, mm-hmm, just, you know, and really being the leaning into to letting, mm-hmm, just the experience carry him is that, no, we're not going to do the, are you ready? We're not mm-hmm going to do that. So there's that disidentification from that frame of being or identity or whatever, just allowing the space, setting a period of time, and then just letting him do the activity, being in, mm-hmm, the body, just doing the activity,
yeah,
of running, and,
yeah,
then getting to experience, hey, this is kind of fun, and something else takes, mm-hmm, hold and does, we might say, life runs,
yeah,
the human.
Yeah, and I can really feel it. It's like, so, you know, it's just like, so I start doing the timing, and I can watch, so it's like, okay, I'm doing 8:15s. Okay, great. And then it just starts to drop. Mm-hmm. And what's been amazing is to watch all the beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but then there's kind of a ceiling here, and you can't,
mm-hmm,
and the foot's not still not right, and the biomechanics, and you're, in the second mile, there's a lot of elevation, so that's always going to be about 20 seconds slower.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how it's happened, but I've just been able to, not even necessarily super consciously, but there's been a process of just suspending that.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And what happens is, because so I have this thing on my phone, it's a little app, and it just tells you what your mile pace is as you're running, so, uh-huh, I'm not looking at anything.
Uh-huh.
And what keeps happening is like, whoa, I just ran a 7:32 first mile, how is that possible? I don't know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then, well, the second mile is always slower. Uh-huh. And then like 7:38, what? It's usually 20 seconds slow. Whoa, okay.
Uh-huh.
And then you just get like, I'm not doing any of this.
Uh-huh.
And then I can watch the difference between I'm running, and then it gets caught into a conversation, and all of a sudden I wake up into, I can feel I'm not in the life energy anymore. Everything is, I mean, if I was looking at the time, I bet you it slows down by a good 30
uh-huh
seconds
uh-huh
per mile. And then I watch, okay, lean in, and here comes the energy, and then there goes the full stride again. And it's like, whoa. I mean, that's the movement that we're practicing.
Yeah.
And to get it so tangibly is,
oh,
really cool.
Yeah, it's such a marvelous example. Because what you're describing, the process, is just doing, having everything be a workshop. Everything about it is, mm-hmm, a workshop. There's awareness expanded to everything from what the mind is doing, kind of when it's talking, yammer, yammer, yammer at you, to when that actual information drops in, okay, you know, from the app or whatever,
mm-hmm,
to what the body is doing, mm-hmm, how it responds, mm-hmm, how the voice responds to the information. I mean, it's just all a workshop.
Yeah.
And there's like this, I'm picturing like this whole big, huge, humongous bubble of awareness that it's all happening in.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what's, you know,
yes,
is holding it all.
Yeah. And that's exactly that big bubble of awareness, and practicing having that attention on awareness. It's like I started off with, that's where I really want to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think in the last three guidances, or three of the last several guidances with Sherry, like, she's mentioned that.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's a place of practice.
Yeah.
Because I sense that when we're there, we don't have, all this other stuff that we do is structure. It's pointing at living from that gap.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and it's amazing that how little I spend actually paying attention to the gap and how much I get caught up in the, it's like the finger instead of the moon.
Yeah. So it's amazing to see how much the ego can still kind of come in and draw attention to the finger, but also aware of that, oh no, that's what I've been looking at for some time now.
Yeah. And it's just fun to see it like translate all kinds of places. Like I just did a 30 days no caffeine. It's just an ongoing, I'm going to end this addiction, which is really an addiction to ego. And I can just sense, kind of like when I start off on the runs now, this is going to be pretty fast, but I don't know. But I sense with the caffeine, at some point, this thing that I haven't been able to do with freedom, I'm going to be able to do with freedom. I mean, I'm not going to do it, but I sense that it's going to happen.
It's just a matter of...
It feels like it. There's a willingness. Yeah. I can feel the power of life. Yeah. It seems the trajectory of transformation. I have all the support. Look where I live.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, I don't know how I'm going to get there. I don't know how it's going to happen, but it just...
But I can sense it. That it's inevitable.
Kind of, yeah.
That winning... for lack of a better word, is inevitable.
Yeah.
Kicking the addiction, letting go of the ego, running from life, all of that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we have all of the support, we have the willingness, we have, you know, everything that we need.
Yeah.
And it's happening. And then so much evidence that you've been laying out this morning that it is happening.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, as you were talking, it's like, I should make more recordings about this place. Because it's starting to talk to me about, oh, you're just in the undulation. You're just up on the high point, but you're going to head back down. And it's like, okay, maybe I will. Uh-huh. That'll be interesting to see.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, I don't need to be afraid of any of its little, like, other shoes going to drop kind of business.
Yeah. And seeing that it's it that's saying that.
Yeah, that's just another form of resistance. Mm-hmm. Okay. You got it.
Form of resistance. And who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I've been moved by a story from Zen Flesh, Zen Bones, and it seems appropriate to what we're talking to this morning. And basically, the synopsis is, you know, a revered Zen teacher ends up in a farmhouse spending the night and realizes that everyone in the house looks rather depressed, and he finds out that the head of the household is drinking and coming home drunk every night, and it's having an effect on the family. So he stays the night in the farmhouse. The man comes home drunk. He feeds him, and he passes out. Not the teacher, but the head of the household. And the teacher sits all night in meditation. And the man wakes in the morning and sees himself at the feet of the Zen teacher, apparently to the emperor, and has this, like, oh my God, you know, huge disappointment that he was drunk in front of this teacher. And basically what I got from was the teacher says to him, you know, it's not the content, it's not the drinking, it's just that life is so precious to waste one moment. And he awakens and decides to walk with the teacher when the teacher leaves. And after he walks about 10 miles, the teacher says, you can go home now, you can go. He goes, no, I think I'll just go a little bit farther with you. A little bit farther. He goes, you can go back now. He goes, no, I think I'll just go a little bit farther with you. And he, you know, same thing happens again. He goes, I think I'll just go a little bit farther with you. And he never turned back. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that he ended up being the head of a line of Zen. And his name was, he never turned back. Mm-hmm. Meant he never turned back. And so, you know, to just, as we're talking about practice this morning, and, you know, it's that willingness to never turn back. To just keep, I was just so struck with that. You know, it's like, there's been so many times, it feels like, you know, it's like, okay, I've gone far enough. You know, it's hard. You know, gosh, I've gone farther than most people, you know, maybe in a lifetime. I think maybe I'd like to just go back to the couch for a while and just, you know, it's good enough. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, something comes in. No, let's just hang in there for a little bit. We'll walk another mile and then, you know. And so, you know, to just, you know, just what was, I mean, both the actions that we can do to reverse global warming or whatever it is, you know, we just don't know. Yeah. We just don't know where it's going. Yeah. And it's not those sweeping measures. And, you know, maybe just that one little, like, well, I guess I'll just walk another mile or run another mile or whatever. Who knows what impact that's having.
Yeah.
And I woke up this morning and, you know, there was a little bit of wool gathering, like, oh, it's so nice in bed, you know, and then looking at that story in the light of, you know, it's not the content, it's what we do with each precious moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so just looking at that this morning, and again, it's not the content, but I'm just looking at the times that I might engage in a little negativity or, you know,
just a little unconscious.
Grabbing that precious moment.
Mm-hmm. And seeing and really identifying with the disappointment that the man felt when he woke up from his drunkenness at the feet of the master, the Zen master, and feeling not shamed or not, you know, it's not the content, but really getting that I don't want to waste any of this precious life.
Mm-hmm. And it's that deep desire, which I think is what fuels practice, and just watching the, even after having that awareness, you know, walking out and then, you know, finding the attention going, just, you know, slipping away into less than consciousness again. I'm like, whoop, there it goes, you know.
And noticing is the operative word there, right? Noticing, that's what the attention is doing. Which is the not turning back.
Exactly. Yeah. And how every time that a choice is made, or just a note, you know, an attention is brought to that, it is a moment of not turning back. And
because that's how it works, isn't it? That, I mean, because, you know, we hear stories like that of the man kept walking with the Zen master, and he didn't turn back. Then he walked further. Then he walked further. Mm-hmm. You know, and those stories can really point to exactly the experience that you're laying out. Mm-hmm. Okay, I noticed attention went here. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed attention was on wool gathering. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then I had noticed attention. You know, it's like, you know, you at some point you notice, okay, I think I've gone far enough, but you keep going. Mm-hmm. You know, we keep on walking. Mm-hmm. It's metaphorical, right, in the story, but it's actually what you experience in your life. Yeah. So we just don't stop.
And I mean, as you reflect that, I mean, honestly, is not, that which we are seeking is causing us to seek. I mean, I don't know, you know, what it is that keeps not turning back, but something not just keeps not turning back. Mm-hmm. And I'm along for the ride.
And we get the precious opportunity to be along for the ride.
Right.
Which is what we can imagine. It was what the Zen master was reflecting to the man. This is a precious opportunity to be along for the ride.
Love the conversation, and kind of what I'm seeing in it is. The image that's coming up is playing with mastery, that it feels like what you know, I love that image of coming at something with a, not from a, okay, what can I do and how can I be really good at this and how can I, but just sort of that, I feel like playing is the back door to it. And as we begin to play, it's like, wow, you know, we're in this body and it's a miracle and everything we're doing is a miracle and everything that's around us is a miracle. And then it sort of inspires that, that not turning back, that, you know, just staying here and wow, it would be possible to wake up. Wow. You know, and just, and coming at it from kind of like, not like a should or, you know, I have to or I'm gonna or, but just almost like a, yeah, like a playfulness.
Yeah, well, the very phrase, playing with mastery, is quite different than achieving mastery, right?
Yeah.
It's a different attitude. So I'm not a, okay, I'm gonna, you know, and then there's gotta be something that's gonna tell me when I'm mastered or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's not the attitude of mind. It's a playfulness that is a, wow.
Yeah.
This is possible.
This is possible. It's actually really helpful because connecting it with the very first conversation, I got to, recently I was speaking with Teresa and we were talking about just all the challenges, right, that those girls are up against. And I watched kind of this one energy that comes up is just like kind of a mama bear, like up on my hind legs, you know, whatever it takes.
We're gonna help these girls.
Yeah, and just like, that system is so against them and so many, and not that, it's also very clear to me, that was one of the things in the conversation with Teresa, it's so clear to me that sort of, it's no one's fault, right? I mean, you could go back to the beginning of beginning's time with, well, but this, yeah, but, well, that's because of this, and that's because, you know, just, it doesn't feel like it's anyone's fault in particular, but there is this energy that rises up in me of like, we can do this kind of thing, and it's somehow very helpful to have that that playful mastery be introduced into it, like, what's possible?
Yeah.
Right? If we just go to that root of, I feel like probably where that energy first comes from, which is kind of an authenticity of just that love and that possibility in that, and to stay with that and sort of, instead of going to that place I project that was being talked to of like, all right, now I'm gonna, you know, what we're gonna do is...
Yeah, well, that's what was just dropping it for me, is that huge mama bear kind of energy is so, it's life, right? So bad, it's so grounded in love. I mean, even kind of coming up from unconditional love, right? And then if we let ego take it into that drive and, you know, I'm gonna, whatever, maybe even a blame, but no, seeing, okay, there's no one to blame. It's just a huge energy that is available through which we can love so and do whatever is there to do in that playing with mastery sort of way.
Yeah, it's funny. I was looking a lot yesterday at the image of the Grinch Who Stole Christmas kept coming up. That place of, you know, so the Grinch goes down and steals everything that supposedly is Christmas. From the, I think it's the Who's down in Whoville. And so he's just up there in his mountain, just ready to like be so happy to see how they're going to just wake up and be miserable, and because they don't have anything, no presents, no food, no Christmas trees, no decorations, no anything.
He's got it all.
He's got it all. And of course they wake up and don't skip a beat. They're just singing their Christmas songs and their... So I was thinking about that with the bridge walk, that, you know, you can take the bridge away, but the process is still there. You know, that process of celebration. And it just seems like the possibility is to stay with that process and not get pulled into, but we don't have this and we don't have that and that didn't happen and what about this and... Yeah. To stay with the process of it.
Oh, that is such a neat image, because we get to, you know, and we can project on the Who's in Whoville that maybe they even got to see something.
Right.
In that experience.
Yes.
You know, so we got to see, oh, it's not the bridge walk, it's not the drumming, it's not the, it's the spirit that, and really so beautifully laid out in the email that was sent out about it. Oh, so beautifully worded.
Yeah.
That really, that is what we can celebrate wherever we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. So I don't know if it's related, but it just, I felt like it was so instructive in kind of how the workings of conditioned mind. And I thought of it somehow when that first conversation was happening, but that I had this dream, and I've been dreaming so much lately, and a lot of times in the dream realizing that I'm dreaming. And I had this funny thing. It just, when I woke up and realized it, I was laughing. So I was in a store, and you know, at the front counter, like always, there's all the sugar things, all the things you know, at least conditioning wants to eat. So I realized in this dream they had these chocolate covered biscuits that I loved, right? So I'm like, oh, this is perfect. It's a dream, so I can eat them. this is such a perfect chance to get to, and there'll be no impact, and I, you know, the body won't suffer because it's a dream, right? It's completely. And then I looked at it, I was like, but they don't have the flavor I want. And I was like, wow, it's a dream, right? And I realize it's a dream, but they don't have the dark chocolate ones. It's like, what? Somehow there was the disconnect. If even though I'm in the dream, I realize it's a dream, I can eat these with no impact, but I can't.
You're creating.
That I wanted to have. Somehow that just struck me as so, like, the belief system that we're in.
Yes. Right? It is such the setup.
Right? Because if it's a dream, great. Well, they don't have the dark chocolate. Well, make the dark chocolate. But somehow
dream it up.
So
in some way, seeing that's what we're caught in. Right?
That we realize we're caught in it, but still there's somehow that last vestige of, something that hangs on, that somehow, then there's the belief, but I can't have influence over that, or I can't, I don't know.
See if this is what you're saying, that here it is, it's like you get the chocolate covered biscuits, but there's some kind of disappointment that's got to insert itself. Call it karmic or whatever.
To tell you the truth, I'm not even sure exactly what the teaching is in it, but it struck me as so funny that there I am in the dream, realizing it's a dream, realizing I need to eat these things. Oh, but they don't have the flavor.
Funny. Yes. Thank you. Rich.
I feel like I had a lesson in compassion this week. You know, I made a lot of the early bridge walks, and I've kind of been a hermit for the last 6 years or so, just at work. And when I heard on the radio show that the bridge walk was canceled, somebody got really disappointed and to the point of grief. And it was a little bit out of proportion, maybe, with what happened. But I really wanted to go, you know, just to connect with some people who I haven't seen in years, and not to socialize about, you know, stuff that isn't important, but just to see them as a sangha, you know.
Yeah.
And I was eating lunch, and all of a sudden my mind went to two kids that I counseled that died at the place that I used to work. I mean, nobody died because the bridge walk was canceled, but I was so shocked by it that my mind immediately went to these two grief experiences with these two. One kid OD'd while I was sick, and I probably could have talked his PO out of having him stay a little longer because he was a heroin addict, and he should have been with us a year, not half a year, and he ended up dying. And another kid was probably the best athlete we had out of 1,000 kids, and I was his football coach and his case manager, and I took him clothes shopping. He said it was the only time that anybody ever took him clothes shopping, and he really grew into a gentleman. We had a culinary arts program, and he was really wonderful. And in one group, he said he didn't want people to see him just as an angry black man. He was really a bright young man, and I really felt good about getting him into a group home with. They owned a restaurant, so he could continue to work in culinary arts, and. He's a great football player. I mean, he could have played in the pros. And got him into a group home close to a junior college. A guy running a program used to play for the Seattle Supersonics. I mean, Seattle Seahawks. So I thought, this is a perfect opportunity for this young man to grow, go to college, and break the chain of violence that he's a gang member, kind of born into it. And I was waiting to hear from him, you know, in college one day, and then I heard that he did a home invasion and got shot and killed. Mm-hmm. So I'm eating my lunch yesterday, and after the bridge walk was canceled, my mind went to these two grief. I found myself crying. And I was just trying to be tender with myself and just say, okay, this happened. What does this have to do with the bridge walk? And I think the connection was, you know, sometimes when we have expectations, conditioning has this agenda, and something doesn't happen, and it can beat us up about, well, you should have done this or you should have done that. You know, that feels sad, you know, for the beating, not for the result. But when we have a heart's desire, and it's wholesome, and it doesn't come to pass, there's a real sadness there, I think. And so I just, you know, I was crying a little bit. I realized I was crying. I think the tears fell into my food, and that's how I realized I was crying. And then I did my dishes, and I walked up to the board, and I was going to write a note and post it to the guest master. I said, no, you know, it's better idea stuff, and you've only been here a couple weeks. And the note was going to say, well, why don't we go eat lunch as a group and then go see Wonder Woman? And it's funny how life just sometimes comes around. And so I realized how important it is to be with yourself when things that you really want to have happen and are good, mm-hmm. or wholesome, or whatever, don't happen.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, because what you're describing is a lot of grief and sadness from what the heart really loved, wanted to connect with Sangha, loved those young men that you had cared for and counseled, and having felt the disappointment, even the grief, and just being wrapped up in the care and compassion of life, seeing how it all unfolded, at least in this case, you know, as you were describing yesterday about the bridge walk, it just unfolded beautifully to support and care for Rich, and that was actually the process that you laid out of being with the grief, with mm-hmm. the sadness.
Yeah, and I never would have guessed. I mean, when I signed up to come here, it was like I really wanted to be here for the precepts retreat at the time, and the bridge walk I had missed for many years, and I used to go all the time. But it was like the bridge walk was like the icing on the cake kind of thing, you know. But it sure felt like the cake when it was canceled. And so it's just a good thing to know and to watch, and just to realize that it's really important to practice compassion and be with yourself when you get a disappointment.
Yeah, it's everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be with yourself and practice compassion when you get a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really, really important. Yeah. Okay. Ashwin?
I just love Sangha. Mm-hmm. Because as I was meditating, I encountered this place of intense separation, mm-hmm. which had me, right? That the resistance to I mean, the content feels very real somehow, and in that moment there isn't the ability to figure it out. Mm-hmm. there's the awareness that somehow the other life is going to resolve this one too, because it's my experience over and over and over and over again that that's what happens, right? Mm-hmm. And just to sit in group and listen and watch, not the content being resolved, but the process of resistance getting worn away mm-hmm. by presence, mm-hmm. right? I don't feel like I can engage. I don't feel like I can contribute, but I can be here. And everything that everyone says removes the separation.
Yes.
And that's the gift, that the place is, okay, if the content gets resolved, I won't feel separate anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's not the content resolution that prevents the separation, it's being present.
Yes.
Right? And being present and being connected to every person's story, every person's process, every person's wonder makes me in wonder, in not knowing, in playing, in wisdom, in grief, and back in connection.
Yes.
Right? Which is, I think, that intuitive sense we get with practice, that life is going to bring me back to life, not through the resolution of what's separated, but through the breaking down of what separation is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that it is the process of showing up, of presence, that is going to dissolve the separation. It's the process of being here.
That's right.
That is going to dissolve the process of not being able to be here.
That's right. Well, and I watched this time because there was that sense of complete deadness, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing here. I'm not going to be able to say anything. I don't even care about what's being said is the position of ultimate separation.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. I didn't come back to connection.
Yeah.
Presence led me back to presence.
Uh-huh. Let's right. underline that. So it's not that I came back to connection. It wasn't that that which was gripping you got resolved, either on a content or on a process level.
That's
because
right.
it doesn't. It's I. It is separation. Mm-hmm. But presence called forth presence. Mm-hmm. And that's what that was. It was a shift. It, you know, when we talk about the tracks, it was the shift.
And all it took was one round.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Right? Because, and the magnificent part is, none of what was said on the content level addressed the content that separated, and yet the answer was there.
On the content level?
On the content level.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just amazing how whole mind can speak to you about the answer indirectly.
Yes.
In fact, it never comes directly as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
And so the story about the Zen teacher and the thing started, it defined the place of separation for me, which is the moment when you're following your heart and then the thing that you're following says, go back.
Yes.
So then, if my heart says I want to go, but what I'm following says turn back, what is that place of darkness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, do I go with the intuition of my heart? Or do I go with that which I'm following?
Yes.
Because that's what my heart wants.
Mm-hmm.
What is the right place?
Mm-hmm.
And how can you not take that personally?
When they tell you to go back.
I'm telling you to go back. Mm-hmm. What does that even mean if it puts me in conflict with everything that's asking me to move forward towards what I saw modeled?
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the answer to that was in that place of grief. Because what I'm experiencing is not separation, it's grief.
Yeah.
It's grief at two things that were supposed to be aligned, not being aligned.
Yeah.
Right? Here's the heart's desire, and then there is a no.
Yeah.
Or maybe a no. Because from conditioned perspective, it is perceived as no, not as a choice point to choose life.
Right.
Right. That's the resolution. It's like, it may say, it may come as no. No bridge walk, death, whatever it is.
What was supposed to happen?
No chocolate flavored.
Yeah.
Right? But at that point, I can go to the disappointment that this and this
don't align.
Mm-hmm. Or I can still choose life.
Yes, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so then there is no separation because there is no conflict.
Yes.
There is no conflict because what the mind went to was the interpretation of a lack of alignment as no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not, it's a choice for yes.
Yes.
It's still a choice for yes.
Yes. Yes. So we get to that place where there's an apparent lack, or maybe even a real, whatever, lack of alignment in the mind. And then, or in the life, and then the mind takes that as a no.
Yes.
But what life is offering is that is always a choice point for life.
Yes, and the way that the resolution completely dropped in is only in the mind is it exclusive,
mm-hmm.
mutually, right? Mm-hmm. That part of the spiritual path that I've been experiencing lately is there is glory in the mess.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That there isn't just one perspective. And when I feel like I am in direct opposition to everything that is this perspective,
mm-hmm.
it's the place where I don't have unconditional experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm still holding on to a position.
Yeah.
It is my best opportunity to learn to be okay with the mess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grieving. I can experience difference as no rather than a choice for life till I experience it as a choice for yes.
Mm-hmm.
But the inherent need for the order of everything,
mm-hmm.
for the resolution of everything,
mm-hmm.
rather than being in the process of mess,
mm-hmm.
which is the only place I can think of where all is okay.
Yes.
Where all can just be.
That is the place of the unconditional.
Right? It doesn't matter what it is,
mm-hmm.
but it still has a place in this cauldron.
Yes. Even sitting in meditation and feeling utterly separate.
Because if I had not had that experience of that,
mm-hmm.
and then sitting in group and watching completely unrelated life processes come to that resolution, my faith in always coming back to the unconditional, no matter what, is not going to be something I get devoted to.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, life will just keep offering us those opportunities over and over and over until and as a great gift
yes.
for us to get it.
Yeah, I was listening to something that somebody said, which really caught my attention, where one of the things was that we awakening is always through several dark nights of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's just it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just have to know where you are in the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Either at the peak of the crest of the trough or in the process of the gray between the two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is. And if life, this person said it this way, if life is interested in awakening, then after it realizes itself through one place of suffering, it's going to seek the next place of suffering
mm-hmm.
as what it needs to bust through.
Because mm-hmm.
I'm often aware of, I just broke through that. Well, don't I have a second to rest in the glow of it? Do I need to go through that? But that sort of framework of, well, it's awakening.
Yes.
It doesn't want to stick around. You know, sitting
it's
on top
all
of
the
mountain.
Glow.
Yes.
It's all the glow.
Well, but that's
yeah.
its process.
Yes.
And it's not like I can't stay in the expanded awareness of the glory of the mess.
Right. Right.
Right.
Because you didn't say that you saw that it was okay for mess. No, it was glory of the mess.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. So to even move to, can't I just enjoy the glow, is a shrinking
that's
of
right.
a perspective that this
it's,
is glow.
It's a position.
It's a position.
Where this is acceptable and everything else isn't.
Yes.
Which took me back to that first conversation where you never know.
Yeah.
You absolutely never know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what is happening, what its impact is, why it's happening,
yeah.
happening here and happening everywhere else,
yeah.
is just, And so then the temptation is to go to, well, can I please always remember that?
Yeah.
Right? So I don't go to those forsaken places where tears are running down my cheeks when I'm sitting in meditation and feeling so low.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's unconditional. I don't know if we'll ever get to the unconditional there, but it's on the way to it.
Yes, it is on the way to it. And just as I think Sherry's been talking about with the undulations, right? That when we get that it's on the way to it, that it is all that's the place of real freedom.
Yes. Well, and the gift for me in that is I don't know when I'm there that it's on the way to it. And so when I pop out of it, it's all fine. Uh-huh. But there, it doesn't feel like it's on the way to it.
Yeah.
And that's also fine.
Uh-huh.
Or rather, that's intellectualizing it, but in the sense of, I'm not going to know on the way to there that it's on the way to there, and that's all right. Right? It all right in the sense of the unconditional acceptance of it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Not that I should feel differently or there's nothing wrong with anything, but that's sort of not helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's an awareness place where it's on the way to there.
And that's the faith place that
that's
you're pointing
to. That's the
faith place, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which I experienced as sitting here, knowing I was separate, and knowing that by the time 11:25 came, whatever went on in this room, I'd be back to communion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because that's how it works.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you put yourself in the place, in the process, and literally, I guess, in this case, the place where how it works is going to work here, because that's where you are.
Yeah, well, and you know, Rebecca, I'm kind of beating this horse to death, but it's so important that the words articulate the experience when I go listen to this recording, is that it's not even I put myself in this place, but this sense of to get completely religious, the intelligence that animates has me and is calling me home. Right? It's not like I'm going to have the faith in order to do this, but the growing sense of, you know, I'm in that embrace.
Yeah.
And every place that I say no to that embrace, I'm going to be drawn in.
Yeah.
And this is the process.
Yes.
And the faith is in that now.
Yes.
Right, not practice would work or the
Sangha will save me or anything.
Or presence would be there or the training's going to kick in or all of that's true because without that, that's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
But that sense of I'm going to be carried.
Yes.
There's presence here. It's not working from in out. It's working from out in.
Yes.
That sense of the universe is friendly.
Yes.
Right?
That which animates has you and is calling you home.
Yeah. I'm not seeking, I'm being sought.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
You know?
And is closing, holding you in even tighter in the embrace every time there's that no, that position, that whatever, it's the embrace is holding you, us, all.
Yeah. I like that I'm being sought.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to say, I just love how, you know, after I did that Zen recording, I recorded this morning about my awarenesses with the story, I took some time with a mentor, and it's exactly what I got.
Mm-hmm.
You're embraced.
Mm-hmm.
And just let us, you know, just accept it. You know, just feel this, well, it came out as like this cloak of love, and just be embraced by it and let it, you know. And so I just love
how it gets reverberated all throughout the morning, right? Yeah.
And once again, it just that support for recording and listening and, you know, just allowing the wisdom to the animates to have its say on the recorder, you know, that it's
The wisdom that animates have its say on the recorder.
So it can be played back over and over and over again.
So that can be what we experience.
Yeah.
yeah. over and over and over, playing it back out. Yeah. Any?
As I was listening to that, what was helpful for me was who says it's a mess? You know, for me,
who says it's a mess?
I go back to those dogs, you know, who came down a few Sundays ago, and recognizing that what was happening was I was calling it a disruption, mm-hmm. and then I thought nothing was disrupted. There were dogs. And then they went home. And then the group started in here and I started out there. That's all that happened. Wow. Nothing was disrupted.
Yeah.
And so it was just helpful for me, as I was just listening to that, that I can, where my mind can go is, well, this is a disruption, this is wrong, this is a mess, this is, and I'm realizing that that's just as somebody's definition.
Yes.
Actually, all that's happening is all that's happening.
Uh-huh.
And,
yeah.
And, just that it's so conditioning is so quick to call it something.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Problem, a mess, and that's just a definition.
Yeah, that calling it a disruption was just ego's calling it something, and that what wisdom saw or what you saw was that nothing was disrupted. It just is what happens, and that's what's happening all the time. Just what's happening.
I know, and it's so hard to get that. It's so hard to. Because we know it's supposed to happen, and how things are supposed to be, and uh-huh. even how things are supposed to unfold, and how we're supposed to feel, and how enlightenment's supposed to happen, and none of that is true. It's, mm-hmm. And it's just it was just so helpful to hear that, because my mind goes to, oh God, you know, this is wrong, this is a mess, and I thought, no, it's, all that's ever happening is just what's happening.
Yes. Yeah.
Boy, and to let that alone, that's really. Challenging and also really exciting.
Oh, very exciting. Yes, it's huge.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's really helpful to hear people. Essentially what I'm saying is hearing people talk about how life works. Because I've been noticing in another conversation I heard about, I have a really wonderful life and I wish I would have realized it earlier. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing, doing monastic practice, watching the head go to, well, if I didn't live here, then da 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 da. And it's like, well, what if I didn't live here? Well, I'd like to meditate, you know, 3 times a day.
Yeah.
I'd like to really, really be active, you know, not just sitting, but have an active lifestyle and be outside a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to really have a community of people who are doing awareness practice. And this was being mentioned earlier, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is it.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's Sherry, like the secret of life is to want what is.
Uh-huh.
And I think from an ego place is like, I want this deprivation.
Uh-huh.
That's not what I want.
Yeah.
But when I get in line with what I really want and see that I really like to have animals in my life. I think I'd like to have cats and dogs. Oh, there's 3 cats and 2 dogs. I mean, it's just like I really like how to learn how to build stuff. Oh, uh-huh. We're going to put you're going to manage some of these things. And,
uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one thing after another. Yes. And it's like, this is it. So then when I just heard about, so resistance does what it does. It resists. And the process of awakening does what it does, which at least the way I heard it was, it seeks out places to awaken to.
Yes.
It's like, I could just stop resisting all of that, quote, pain and suffering, because the process is, it's not going to stand on the mountain and go, you know, for a long time, which I watched myself do all morning. No, I want to stay here. No, uh-huh. I want to stay here. It's going to seek out that next place.
Uh-huh.
And that feels true to me.
Uh-huh.
And if I know that, then I can feel myself getting on board with that.
Yes.
You know, the process is already happening, so I might as well. And just to hear it articulated, it helps catch those places where I'm like, but I just want to stay here a little bit longer.
Yes.
But I don't really want to go there right now.
Yes.
It's like the train's leaving.
Yeah.
And we're dedicated to being on the train.
Yes.
And I think the train does this. It just keeps going. So it's like, jump on and just change that, recontextualize.
Exactly, yeah, recontextualize and realize wherever those pinches are, no, you can That's just all that is resistance. And so we can drop it and be in that embrace or be on that train and ride it with just kind of joyful abandon.
And actually, just when you said those pinches and kind of like moving the body, just like that's the tacking the sail. Uh-huh. Or that's actually what's moving us, you know, like, oh, I hate the pinches. Yeah. That's actually what's moving us back to center. Yeah. Those are like the little bumper things and the, you know, little dot blots. Yes.
The little course correction.
Yeah, the little course correction. So it's just amazing to see how it's all set up for us and to have life in this group articulate that and then have life register.
Yes.
Just like, wow.
Yes. Kind of just in floating out of group on something.
Just floating out of group. With a little